Timothy Leary lives. No, 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 he's outside looking in. Timothy Leary lives. No, 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 he's outside.
Produced at the studios of KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon, this is Free Culture Radio. I'm Doug McVeigh. Free Culture Radio is an examination of drugs, drug cultures, and the ineluctable, indelible, and indispensable influence of drugs on society. Free Culture Radio neither promotes the use of any drugs nor condemns people for being involved in drugs. To the extent that drug use presents problems for individuals or society, those problems are made worse and more intractable when people who use drugs are treated as others and ignored, stigmatized, and even brutalized. Discussions in the U.S. about drugs these days are typically about either the marijuana industry or about opioids. We sort of have a very U.S.-centric focus when it comes to drugs. I mean, sure, other nations supply some drugs, but we rarely think about the impact of drug war on those other nations or drug use by other peoples. When it comes to drugs themselves, in the U.S., the conversation is dominated by marijuana, specifically the marijuana industry. I mean, really, most of those are conversations about money. The conversation about drugs as drugs is dominated by opioids and the overdose crisis. Those conversations, sadly, tend to be filled with misinformation, stigma, and badly reported news items. So, on this edition of Free Culture Radio, we're going to talk about drugs other than marijuana or heroin and fentanyl, drugs that are becoming more of a concern, more available, more widely used. We're also going to look at drugs and the impact of drug war in other countries, and not just the reform-minded European countries that have had success with harm reduction and decriminalization. The UN's Commission on Narcotic Drugs convenes for its annual session every year in March, several days of meetings, presentations, and side events. The CND also holds meetings between sessions. The most recent intersessional meeting of the CND runs from October 16th through October 18th. Loyal listeners to this show, or to another show I do called Century of Lies, will know that I am a strong critic of the Commission on Narcotic Drugs because of its opacity. The international drug control apparatus prefers to keep the public in the dark. Meetings of the CND, which are held in Vienna, Austria, have always been webcast live only, with no archive of past meetings on the CND website. Until now. Well, kind of. This year, the CND webcast its meeting, at least the first day of it so far, via a YouTube channel. Now, the video is unlisted. You won't be able to find it by doing a Google search or by searching on YouTube. And when I last checked, they didn't have the links posted on the CND's website, which is a part of the website belonging to the UN Office on Drugs and Crime. So they're still clinging to that desire for secrecy, but we are chipping away at it. So on today's show, we're going to hear from some of the people presenting. First, here's Dr. Gilberto Guerra, chief of the UNODC's Drug Prevention and Health Branch.
Thank you, Excellency, Mr. Chair, and many thanks to the delegates who are here starting this morning early until 5. Good evening to everyone. I wanted, in continuity with what has been presented by Martin in the other, from the other section, I wanted to present something about psychoactive substances, new psychoactive substances, and stimulants. I start with a question to you. Are you concerned about stimulants in general? I say that we have to be absolutely concerned about depressants of the central nervous system, such as heroin and opioids and synthetic opioids. But we cannot joke also with the stimulants. We cannot under-evaluate the problem created by stimulants. And also the numbers of stimulants. In the World Drug Report this year, we have presented 68.2 million of people using amphetamine, cocaine, and ecstasy, and only 53 million people using heroin and prescription opioids. It means that the mass of people exposed to the part of the humanity exposed to stimulants is larger than that exposed to depressants of the central nervous system. And this is not including the new psychoactive substances, because most of the families of the new psychoactive substances, such as the derivative of catinone, methylcatinone, mefedrone, or the substituted phenethylamines of benzylpiperazine or synthetic cannabinoids, have a stronger action as stimulants or a component as stimulants. but the service for people affected by stimulant use disorder and MPS are not available or not almost not existent, unprepared, empty because you don't offer anything appealing for the patient, and the laboratory are unable to detect the substances. You offer only some counseling and some psychosocial intervention when you are very lucky. And in spite of this, if you consider in Sweden, for example, 189 cases of drug intoxication in the emergency department, emergency room, or intensive care unit, you find around 50 substances out of these 189 cases is an enormous amount, 50 substances belonging to the families of the new psychoactive substances and related stimulants. Also, these drugs, particularly the NPS, are utilized as adulterants. You buy MDMA, ecstasy, you buy amphetamine, you buy cocaine, you buy methamphetamine, but in reality they are selling to you new psychoactive substances, such as this derivative of phenethylamine. In this case, they've evaluated 173 samples at the level of laboratory. They found that in 20 cases there was an association of the classic drugs with MPS. In 49 cases, the classic drugs were not there, only MPS were replacing them. And there are also some good news from the world of the new psychoactive substances. We have a qualitative interview to the patient, to the people using these drugs, saying that they like more the old stuff. They are seeking their own leaf derivatives, such as cocaine, heroin, and cannabis, respect to the synthetic drugs that should produce more depression, more concentration difficulties, feeling of fear and anxiety, and problem to the legs. These drugs are in reality deeply affecting the brain, simply because they are mimicking the effect of a stimulant neurotransmitter in the brain, such as dopamine. You see, mefedrone, methylcatinone, is very similar to the cat coming from the plant Cata edulis. It is very similar to dopamine, the neurotransmitter, the stimulant neurotransmitter of the brain. You find the group of phenethylamine family that are de facto mimicking noradrenaline, norepinephrine, and other stimulants of our brain. You find this anti-worm medication that were used before to treat a worm infection in the intestine, that we find they were paralyzing the worm, and they have been used then by the illicit trafficking to produce this medication that were utilized as hallucinogenic and mainly mimicking a serotonin effect in the brain. But look, the very strange situation, to tell you how much the border between legal drugs and illegal drugs is subtle. Well, the first two in blue, you see clozapine and olanzapine of this family, the piperazines, are not sold in the illegal market, but sold in the pharmacy as one of the most modern and effective antipsychotic medication. The other drugs are not useful for these medical purposes, and they are sold as ecstasy. They are considered stimulant and hallucinogenic effect in the illicit market. Then the family of the synthetic cannabinoids that are mimicking tetrahydrocannabinol in the plant, in marijuana, but also mimicking the neurotransmitter in the brain that is the natural neurological cannabinoid, anandamide. Also in this case with a strong component not only on inducing psychosis but cardiovascular disorders. And when you see this so-called herbal medicine, in reality it's not herbal medicine, it's a way to present the synthetic cannabinoids that could have problems such as myocardial infarction, ischemic stroke and embolic, acute kidney, and so on. When you see unexplained agitation in young people in the emergency room together with cardiovascular symptoms, you should think immediately to the synthetic cannabinoids. Then we have more hallucinogenic new psychoactive substances, meaning serotonin such as LSD, very similar in the formula to the psilocybin that was coming from the magic mushroom, you remember, in the past. I wanted to show you some different setting and pattern of use. For example, this new psychoactive substances utilized in rave party and no drugs, no party, no new psychoactive substances, no party. For disco clubbers, rave party, after hour party. And among this population, 75% of the participants were positive to the toxicological analysis, but 36% of these 75 were positive for NPS, for non-new psychoactive substances. And this is was so-called recreational use, but there is also non-recreational use, a sort of self-medication done with these substances by children or adolescents or young adults with a higher level of psychological distress. Also in Japan, there was an increase of the numbers of using people using the MPS, but what they called by this author are calling this use a sort of dysfunctional use that is not for sure a recreational one. There is a group of people using these drugs for medicate their lack of capacity to establish friendly relationship. For example, they want to have increased ability to socialize through these substances. There are sensation seekers who are asking these substances to have strong emotions. And we cannot forget that 22% of the admission in a psychiatric hospital are positive for new psychoactive substances and stimulants and methamphetamine in the admission to the psychiatric hospital, as I said. And this clearly are going to exacerbate, to aggravate the already existing, pre-existing psychosis. We have a group of people, a population that are considering themselves psychonaut. They don't navigate only the web, but they want to navigate the mind and the soul. They want to understand better what they have inside. Philosopher, alchemist, psychedelic researcher. And these are using the most hallucinogenic NPS. A sort of neo-shamanism, when you have you can mix the effect of rhythmic music together with the substances obtained in modified status of conscience. And also a sort of dissociative status to look to yourself from outside and understand having enhancing your self-knowledge. All these groups, you understand, are totally different from the cultural point of view, and they need a differentiated approach to be reached, and for a normal outreach that was done before is totally not valid for this kind of new things. For example, new psychoactive substances and methamphetamine are accompanying also the mystical beliefs, are accompanying the religious experiences sometimes, and this perception of being of oneness with God and the universe and values of spirituality. Remember the famous movie Matrix, where you have through the use of a tablet, the capacity to understand the reality as it is in reality, because the reality you see, in opinion of this group, is not the true one. And also, you can have a professor in the University of Chemistry and Physics who wants to have effect, or students want to have effect of brain enhancing, increasing the capacity of their brain and cognitive capacity, that are using these drugs without considering the consequences. About methamphetamine, you have you don't need to travel to East Asia to see methamphetamine. This is a very impressive slide, in my opinion, because you have methamphetamine 34%, means more than one-third, among those who are asking for treatment, seeking treatment for opioid dependence in the United States. So the people are going there saying, I am heroin dependent, I am fentanyl dependent, etc., please help me. More than one-third of them have in their urines also methamphetamine. It means that is a sort of mixed use to try to balance the effect of opium and having a so-called normal life. The people risking overdose among those who have opioid dependence in North America, the people at risk for overdose, are twofold, 2.8-fold times increase in overdose, in reported overdose, if they at the same time use also methamphetamine. It means that these are the most severely affected patients with more risky condition. And we have an increase in Australia that has been mentioned also before in the use of methamphetamine. The people dependent on methamphetamine almost doubled in the last decade. And we have also the driver involved in fatal accident that have 89% alcohol drugs in the blood, and they have also a large part of methamphetamine in their blood. We cannot forget that methamphetamine are inducing terrible psychosis or aggravating psychosis. We cannot forget that methamphetamine have been now in the last decade not only taken as orally but injected, provoking also terrible endocarditis, viral endocarditis. And also, very curious, in Europe there was a shortage some years ago of heroin. People started to inject mefedrone and methylcatinone, provoking a resurgence of HIV in countries where the HIV was before defeated. And also, the risk for HIV or hepatitis is also among people who are not injecting but using methamphetamine outside orally or smoked, because they are because of their mental condition, they are not doing protected sex. They are doing unprotected sex. Arrhythmias induced by methamphetamine and cardiovascular disorder that can be fatal. And I want to conclude with these two slides. As a practitioner also, when I think to the people affected by heroin or fentanyl or opioid, synthetic opioid, oxycodone, I think that the depressant of the central nervous system are making my target patient, in a certain sense, homogeneous. These people are injecting or using these drugs, sleeping, waking up in a condition of negative affect and regret and withdrawal, searching for new heroin to inject, and sleeping again. Clearly, also these patients have their personality traits, their characteristics, their cultural background. We cannot say they are equal to each other, the same to each other, but they are homogeneous. If you look to what happens when you have to treat and to approach people affected by psychostimulants and MPS, you find this variegated situation, from drivers to polydrug abuse, from shamanism, from starting from brain enhancing, party drugs, mental health problems, chemsex, doping and bodybuilding and so on. I continue with the religious experience and so on. Imagine to go out with a normal outreach unit, as we think normally in Europe, for example, could be completely ineffective. We should have a differentiated and personalized and specific approach, taking into account and tailoring the intervention on the basis of the cultural needs of this population. Thank you for your attention.
That was Dr. Gilberto Guerra, chief of the UNODC Drug Prevention and Health Branch. He was speaking before the Commission on Narcotic Drugs at an intersessional meeting held October 16th. You're listening to Free Culture Radio. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. And I apologize if my voice sounds hoarse and if you hear me wheezing. I have had some difficulty breathing over the last couple of weeks. I stopped using a vape pen, and I feel a little better as a result. I have only ever used legal products from licensed stores. No illegal products, nothing off the street. I purchase legal, licensed, regulated products from the shop just down the street from me. I stopped using the vape pen after doing research and learning that I wasn't able to find out what was in that liquid. When you look up the ingredients of something and you see that they're withholding that list of ingredients, claiming that it's a trade secret, here's a pro tip. Put that product back. Don't use it. If they're going to hide the contents of what they're selling you so that you can heat up that liquid and inhale the hot gases, inhale it deeply, bringing that oil deeply into your lungs, if they're not going to tell you what's in it, don't give them your money. Protect your health. Protect yourself. Now let's get on with the rest of the show, shall we? Next up, we have Amadou Philippe Diandre. He's UNODC Regional Representative for Eastern Africa, based in Nairobi, Kenya.
In this special session, a thematic session of the Commission on Narcotic Drugs, as a UNODC representative covering Eastern Africa, which is one of the most fantastic regions ever, I would like to focus your attention on four different issues. One of them, perhaps, is the most obvious one. We know that there are about 7,700 tons of raw opium, according to the World Drug Report, recently published. And out of these 7,700 tons of raw opium, we have about 300 to 400 tons of heroin. And where is this heroin from the producing countries going? Well, mostly, I would say from 40% to 60% is coming to our coast. Countries like Madagascar, Mauritius, Seychelles are being exposed, very dramatically exposed, into the Swahili coast, into the coast of Kenya, of course, Tanzania, Mozambique, and then around Southern Africa to hit West Africa. That is a big concern. There is a second axis, which is the Red Sea axis. Very soon, UNODC believes that in the next 24 months, we'll have an axis open through the Red Sea. And that poses a lot of problems. The second issue is the drug epidemic, because the increase in the prevalence of heroin consumption is becoming dramatic in the Eastern Indian Ocean member states and also in the Swahili coast and in the entire Eastern Africa. Even though a number of countries have taken bold steps against this epidemic, like Kenya, Mauritius, and Seychelles, a lot more needs to be done in an integrated manner at the regional level. Third issue, synthetic opioids. We have an issue with tramadol going through West Africa, which is basically manufactured in South Asia. But these tramadol and synthetic opioids, this is becoming an issue in Eastern Africa. And last but not least, the financing and the interlinkages between terrorism and drugs. About 21 to 23% of Al-Shabaab operations are currently being funded by drugs, especially heroin. Now, what are the solutions? The solutions to the first problem in terms of heroin being increased and heroin trafficking through the southern route, the solutions are multifaceted. We have to have an integrated approach where law enforcement does more and more profiling in airports and in borders. On the second issue, health. Well, clearly, we have to have also an integrated approach whereby we focalize on harm reduction, but we also focalize on assisting our clients, our new clients, unfortunately, and doing more and more prevention at the early stages, primary, secondary level, and also at the university level. Because now, drug networks are recruiting via the internet. So basically, there has to be an interlinkage, including prevention through the internet. And vis-a-vis the third and the fourth issues, I would say that the interconnectivity between Al-Shabaab and other terrorist groups present already in our region in Eastern Africa, we have to start hitting their funding. How do you hit their funding? We need to start working again on profiling funding to cut their networks, be it through the blockchain or be it in cash, because many times cash comes along with heroin in these merchant vessels. So I hope that these four messages are making you think a little bit, because I think we need to integrate this approach in East Africa with other approaches in West, Central, and Southern Africa. Thank you.
That was Amadou Philip Diandre, UNODC representative for Eastern Africa. He's based in Nairobi, Kenya, and he was speaking at the Commission on Narcotic Drugs intersessional meeting, which is being held in Vienna, Austria. You're listening to Free Culture Radio. I'm Doug McVeigh. Now, let's hear from Ashita Mittal, UNODC regional representative for Central Asia.
Central Asia and Southern Caucasus are between Asia and Europe and also traverse the Caspian Sea and the Black Sea region. It also falls on the northern route of trafficking of opiates that originate out of Afghanistan. Central Asia shares 2,600 kilometers of borders with Afghanistan, and that increasing the vulnerabilities of trafficking of opiates from Afghanistan. In the year 2018, nearly 20 tons of marijuana was seized in Central Asian countries. Along with that, nearly 2.5 tons of hashish, 1.8 tons of opium, another half a ton of heroin was seized. While heroin seizures and opium seizures have decreased over the period of time in the region, it is no complacency that these are not actually found in the region, because recent seizures indicate that the northern route continues to be active, that the traffickers are finding new routes, especially on the new trade and transit corridors that are opening up in the region, as evidenced by the recent seizure of 670 kilograms of heroin that had transited the Central Asian countries in the region. In the last few years, nearly 58 new psychoactive substances have emerged in the markets. Along with that, synthetic cannabinoids, psychoactive substances are also reaching the markets. It is evidenced in the low-threshold clinics that are operating for injecting drug users that polydrug use is common. We also find a combination of new psychoactive substances and prescription drugs that are cocktailed for injecting purposes. Given the geographical location of this region, it is extremely important to strengthen the national capacities of Ministries of Interiors, of Customs, the Border Services in each of the countries. But also equally important is to really foster the culture of greater cross-border cooperation through intelligence sharing agreements, but also to make sure that these efforts are reflected in the overall development agenda of the country. I would like to really emphasize that if we would like Central Asia and Southern Caucasus to continue to be an abode of peace, security, and development, we need to mainstream these issues on the overall development agenda of the country, as well as to foster greater regional cooperation between the countries so we can make sure that our young people, our families, and communities are always safe.
That was Ishita Mittal, UNODC Regional Representative for Central Asia, speaking to the Commission on Narcotic Drugs at an intersessional meeting on October 16th. And for now, that's it. Thank you for joining us. You have been listening to Free Culture Radio. I've been your host, Doug McVeigh. A big thank you to everyone out there fighting for civil rights, human rights, and social justice. Thank you to our engineer. And my deepest thanks go out, and my deepest thanks to you, dear listener, for your support. You make it all worth it. Free Culture Radio has a webpage at kboo.fm/freeculture. Free Culture Radio also has a Facebook page. It's facebook.com/kboofreecultureradio. Please give it a like. You'll find links there to past shows, announcements about upcoming programs and events, and other stuff like news items that may be of interest. And you can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Doug McVeigh. We'll be back in a month to continue our examination of drugs, drug cultures, and the influence of drugs on society. Thanks again for listening. This is Doug McVeigh saying so long.
So long!